CBS Radio presents The Dulles Era, a special program on John Foster Dulles and the imprint he has made on this country's diplomacy. Mr. Dulles has stepped down as Secretary of State because he is seriously ill with cancer. Now, here to narrate The Dulles Era is CBS News correspondent Daniel Shore.
No Secretary of State during his term in office provoked more contradictory and more passionate judgments of himself than John Foster Dulles. Some called him inflexible, others called him changeable. Some said he was too dogmatic, others said he was too equivocal. Some called him too idealistic for the cynical business of diplomacy, others said he was too cynical to embody American idealism. To some he seemed like a lawyer arguing a brief, to others more like a parson preaching rectitude. If there is any general agreement on Dulles, it is that he was consummately skillful, superbly trained, articulate, unsparing of himself, and most of all, dedicated. Few men while in office reveal all of themselves. Dulles revealed less than most of them. The public Dulles was a Dulles of the international meeting, the news conference, the congressional hearing, impersonal and detached. Those closer to him knew another side, considerate, loyal, patient, cool in crisis, a ready twinkle in his eye. But regardless of personal attribute, Dulles's stewardship of American foreign policy will have its place in history. Tonight, we propose to examine the Dulles era, not with the sure perspective of history, but with a tentative judgment of the observer of current history, both at home and abroad. The Dulles era corresponds roughly, but only roughly, to his 6 years as Secretary of State. He had been attending international conferences dating back to 1907. His influence will be felt in American policy in months and perhaps years to come. When Dulles became Secretary of State in 1953, he did not invent a foreign policy. America's posture in the world is more durable than a single man. But he did give it his impress, and he carried it out with his characteristic style. And there is what can be called the Dulles era, which we hope tonight to sum up. We have limited our evaluation to America and her allies. We did not seek any communist evaluation. That would be pointless. Russia's Khrushchev has made clear to me and to others that Dulles was his most hated antagonist. Let us first get an appraisal from Britain, where Dulles has not always been a popular figure. In London, CBS News correspondent Charles Collingwood interviews Edward Crankshaw, historian and foreign affairs analyst of the London Observer.
Mr. Crankshaw, how would you rate Mr. Dulles's performance as Secretary of State?
I don't think it is for me to rate it. He's one of the most high-powered foreign ministers or secretaries of state who've existed for the last 100 years. What the answer of history will be, we shan't know for another 100 years. But at least he's a highly positive character.
Now, how much of his impact on Western diplomacy would you say was due to his own personality and convictions, and how much due to the fact that he represented the United States during a period when American influence was preeminent in Western councils?
Well, I think they went together. to listen to Dulles, to watch Dulles on television, which I've done, and in conferences, you are struck by his immense conviction. I had the impression when I was watching him on a television interview of a fanatical dentist saying, "Open wide, I'm going to take all your teeth out, it'll be good for you." And he did it with joy and conviction such as not been seen in the West for at least 60 or 70 years. This coincided with the fact that America was, during his time, becoming preeminent for the first time in her history.
Now, how much do you think that this conviction of Dulles's was able to impress on people in the rest of the world?
Not so much, I think. And, see, it's very difficult to sort out Dulles as the man and the policymaker from Dulles as presented in the press, which really means the American press. Mr. Dulles himself once complained, I think, that if ever I make a rude remark about the Russians, it's reported in headlines. When I go in for serious analysis, which I do for most of my speeches, nobody reads it.
Well, what do you think of Dulles as a private operator, as a technician in diplomacy?
I should say he's probably much better than we think he is. There's very little has appeared in the press to suggest that he's a skillful diplomat. The whole thing is done in headlines, in dramatic statements, in brinkmanship and all the rest. The fact remains that we have preserved an equilibrium during the last 10 years, that the United States is the most powerful member of the Western coalition and therefore makes the running, that Dulles, for a great part of this last 10 years, has been effectively in control of United States foreign policy, and it has so far paid off. That is a tribute, I think.
In the public mind, overseas at any rate, he was the source of much controversy and the target of much criticism in Europe anyway. Now, why do you think that was?
Chiefly, I think, because of China. I think on the Russian issue, Europe was fairly well agreed with him, although it felt that he should have been more flexible about Russia. That was for him alone to know, because he knew what he had to cope with in America. On China, Europe had decided quite early on that it was nonsense not to recognize this as a fact of life. And Dulles became associated with what we, rightly or wrongly, regarded as that particular nonsense, which was a very strong point.
What about Mr. Dulles as the cement, as the cohesive force in the disparate alliance that we call the Coalition of the West?
Oh, no two words about it. He was a very, very great help there, and that will probably be his historical justification.
He was, or at least seemed to be, more successful with his peers among professional diplomats and heads of governments in the West than he was with public opinion in the West as general, wasn't he?
He was, and yet public opinion in the West accepted him in the end, and is going to miss him very much. No one's more easy to criticize than Dulles. I've done it myself time and time and time again. I mean, he simply asks for it every time he opened his mouth, or every time he was reported, he asked for it. But all the same, public opinion did respect him as a man who knew, or was able to put across that he thought he knew what he was about, which was very deeply needed in the West.
Of course, part of that was that they were used to him, weren't they? That he traveled more than any foreign minister ever had in history. They had a look at him. Do you think this was a useful part of the technique of diplomacy?
I think it's slightly absurd, this endless traveling about on the part of important people who should have important people working for them, as Dulles has. He's got very good ambassadors all over the place. He ought to trust them.
Mr. Dulles once made considerable play with one of his philosophies of diplomacy, which we now call brinksmanship or brinkmanship. Do you think that this was a reasonable point of view for the Secretary of State to have?
I think it's a very reasonable point of view for him to have. I think it's a terrible point of view to express. And I think the great criticism of Dulles is that he always would say what he was doing. He wouldn't do it and pretend to be doing something else. It may turn out, when we read all the papers, that in fact he was saying what he intended us to think he was doing and was doing something else, but he talked too much.
What do you think was Mr. Dulles's greatest success as Secretary of State?
Holding the West together.
And what do you think was his greatest failure?
Not recognizing China.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crankshaw.
That was Edward Crankshaw interviewed by Charles Collingwood. Secretary Dulles once warned France in an attempt to prod her into a European defense community of a possible agonizing reappraisal of our attitude towards France. There was uproar then in France over Dulles. Today the view is more dispassionate. In Paris, CBS News correspondent David Schoenbrunn talks to Raymond Aron, the distinguished professor of the University of the Sorbonne and writer on foreign affairs.
Mr. Aron, I wonder if you could tell us just what the nature of this Dulles era has been and your vision of the Dulles concept of foreign policy for the West.
I believe that the big change on the world scene in the period between 52 and 58 has been the slow evolution from the period of atomic superiority of the United States to the present period of equilibrium of terror, as it's commonly called. And during this 6 or 7 years, Mr. Dulles was the State Secretary of the United States, and he maintained that the only possible diplomacy for the West was a diplomacy of deterrent, which means that he prevented the Soviet Union to make any aggression in the world by threatening to use the atomic force.
Mr. Aron, are you suggesting that Mr. Dulles's unpopular policy of saying no was, in your view, the only right policy?
On certain points of details, the discussion remains open. When Mr. Dulles thought that a limited agreement with the Soviet Union was possible, he did not refuse it. But when it comes to the fundamental problems, I believe that there is no possibility of long-term agreement with the Soviet Union. But fundamentally, I believe that some element of what has been called brinkmanship will remain in the diplomacy of the West. Because brinkmanship, in spite of the expression, which is not specially fortunate, is only the expression of one of the fundamental characters of the new diplomacy in the time of equilibrium of terror. There is, if I may say, bilateral deterrent. Each side threatens the other side to have recourse to atomic arms if it becomes absolutely necessary. But both sides know that they want to avoid, almost at any cost, the H-bomb war.
Would you say that Mr. Dulles has been little understood by the French public and has been perhaps not sufficiently evaluated for his real worth in this country?
There are different elements. First, as man, Mr. Dulles was of a Protestant type, which is rather difficult to understand for the Catholic Frenchman. And B, if Mr. Dulles was right on the general line of his policy, the way it applied it in details was not always very happy. And there might be real discussion among the Western people about the way it applies his right idea in any case.
Mr. Aron, could you comment for us about Mr. Dulles's single-mindedness of purpose, his so-called inflexibility?
Yes, I think there are two aspects to this so-called inflexibility. The first one is the tendency of Mr. Dulles to define the world conflicts in terms of black and white, of evil and good. The second sort of inflexibility is the way in which Mr. Dulles was repeating more the negative aspect of his own policy than the positive one. Because what is negative in his way was to say there is no complete agreement with the communist world possible. But limited agreements are always possible. But instead of saying limited agreements are possible, he was always repeating fundamental agreement is excluded, which everybody knew and would have accepted. So he could have made his own policy more popular by another way of speaking, which come to the point that inflexibility was more in the ways and means and style of personality than in the fundamentals.
What is your view as a French analyst of history and of diplomacy as to the role of a Secretary of State in general and in particular of Mr. Dulles's own concept of the flying Secretary of State?
What seems to me problematical in the way Mr. Dulles handled his job and task was he wanted to do everything alone. He wanted to be the key man to the President of the United States, to be the key man to the Senate, to be the key man to the American public opinion, and to be the key man in Paris, London, Formosa, Bonn, and so on and so on.
A final question, please, Mr. Aron. How would you sum up the diplomatic career and contribution of John Foster Dulles?
I don't think there is a Dulles doctrine which would be either maintained or abandoned. I believe Mr. Dulles was a very courageous, morally convinced pragmatist. He was convinced on the fundamental moral issues of the world contest. But on the other side, he was a pragmatist in diplomacy, maintaining the line when the line has to be maintained, but ready to discuss on limited questions. Will there be a great change now? I don't think so.
Thank you very much.
That was Raymond Aron, interviewed by David Chandran. An assessment of Dulles in his own country is bound to be more difficult. In New York, we talked to an observer generally sympathetic to Dulles' objectives, to Dr. Henry M. Wriston, President Emeritus of Brown University, President of the Council on Foreign Relations, and Chairman of a committee that drafted the plan for State Department reorganization. And we asked Dr. Wriston, what would you say was Secretary Dulles' major impact on the development of American foreign policy?
I think myself it's primarily been a great steadiness. I didn't see him as a great innovator. He worked with the Truman administration and with Secretary Acheson. He negotiated the Japanese treaty. He was in the United Nations. And he has carried forward those policies which were established after the war and after it became clear that Russia was going to be an enemy instead of a loyal ally. And I think its steadiness and firmness and great skill in negotiation rather than innovation or freshness of vision in making policy that's characterized his time as Secretary of State.
It's been said of some of Secretary Dulles' predecessors that they spent so much time conducting foreign policy that they left Congress and American public opinion behind, whereas Secretary Dulles showed a great sensitivity to both congressional and public opinion. Do you think that was, on the whole, a good influence?
Yes, indeed. I think that democratic diplomacy is here to stay, that public opinion is going to be more and more influential as education touches a larger sector of the populace, as it has been doing for the last 35 or 40 years. And also, our foreign relations are now so closely involved with not only negotiation abroad, but with appropriations at home and with domestic politics, that sensitiveness to the views of the Senate and the House and the public seemed to me absolutely essential in a Secretary of State.
You don't think, then, that Secretary Dulles was oversensitive to a point of neglecting our relations with foreign countries?
No, I don't. I think he kept as good a balance in that as can be found.
Now, some have said, jokingly, of course, that the genius of Secretary Dulles was his infinite capacity for taking planes. Do you think the Secretary in his office traveled too much?
Well, I think the situation is such that all secretaries travel too much. If they don't, they travel by deputy. Mr. Acheson used a roving ambassador in Mr. Jessup. And before Mr. Jessup, there was Norman Davis, who was a roving ambassador. And actually, Mr. Dulles was out of the office with an acting secretary in his place less than any secretary since the war except Mr. Acheson. And he traveled, on the whole, rather less than most foreign ministers of other nations. In other words, the world is now so organized that some people want to put it all at the summit and even bypass the foreign ministers. Mr. Khrushchev spoke as if Gromyko was just an office boy, which perhaps he is. But everywhere, the tendency has been to make the minister do the negotiating.
Well, it's strange, considering that you say he was not out of his office as much as people think, that he gave a public image of being a person who traveled all the time. I wonder to what extent the public image of Dulles is not the image of the real man. He, for example, gives an impression of great severity. Now, you know him as a person. Is he really severe as a human being?
Well, he's as human as anyone can be, but when he's business, he's all business. And since he's in business most of the time, and virtually all the time when he's before the public, they don't see the human side of him, which his close associates are perfectly familiar with, and regard the public image as being more a caricature than a portrait.
Dr. Wriston, what to your mind was Secretary Dulles' greatest accomplishment, his greatest success?
I would say his greatest accomplishment in many ways was the negotiation of the Japanese treaty. This was a problem so complicated that it took almost genius to pull it off. And he did that, and the world has profited by it. It's a very good treaty. Most post-war treaties have to be rewritten very soon, but that one has stood up rather amazingly well.
It's interesting, sir, that you mention as his greatest accomplishment something that he did before becoming Secretary of State.
Well, I think as Secretary of State, his greatest accomplishment has been the steadiness and firmness with which he has held policy. There's a great tendency, you know, when your opponent is jumping around like a cork on a stormy sea, as the Russians do, to feel you've got to jump too. And people get very nervous and want to have a man come up with something fresh and original. Often the best thing you can do is to stand your ground and stand still. And he has been very skillful at standing still.
Well, you've mentioned his successes. What would you say was Secretary Dulles's greatest failure?
Well, I wouldn't find many of his policies failure. I think his greatest failure is to project his personality to the public. This concept of him as a rigid, stern, moralistic, inflexible man without a great sense of humor, without warm human traits, is not the man that, as I say, his close associates knew. But I think this is the view the public has had and will have. I think, therefore, he is a man who has gained their respect but not their affection. And yet he does excite affection in those who know him well. I would say, therefore, that his greatest failure was one in what is now called generally public relations.
Thank you, Dr. Wriston. If we can now sum up the Dulles era as seen from this short range, it would seem that even at this close view, the judgment of Dulles is milder than it would have been a few years or even a few months ago. There is better realization that much of what America does in the world stems from the imperatives of history, not from the will of a single man. Dulles has been much linked in the popular mind with catchphrases: massive retaliation, agonizing reappraisal, brink of war. Perhaps he has been the victim of his own eloquence. But more, it would seem, that Dulles tried to shape a coherent foreign policy from the ugly facts of life that were forced upon him. He inherited a world he did not make or like, a world of expanding communist power. His attempt was to couch a basically defensive posture in phrases heartening enough to hold our world together. He did not really try to come to terms with communism except in the most limited fields. To him, communism was most suspect when it showed its most smiling face. Once he told me that he preferred Stalin to Khrushchev because Stalin was more predictable, Khrushchev more dangerous. If the decision was made for domestic reasons to reduce conventional forces, he evolved the idea of massive retaliation to put the best face on a situation which he, Dulles, could not change. Dulles was Secretary of State, not the government. He did what he could with the means available to him. It may be that, essentially, much of what happened would have happened if someone else was secretary during these trying 6 years. Some things might have come out differently. But these years bear the stamp of Dulles's personality. They are and remain the Dulles era. This is Daniel Shore in New York.
You've been listening to The Dulles Era. This is the CBS Radio Network.